you know, he's a big 6'4" defenseman. He's a left shot D. He's a very good penalty killer. He can play the offside. He can play the right side. And he's also known as a tremendous character guy, great teammate. So I think, you know, adding the type of player and person into our group makes us, you know, deeper. I think it adds to our depth. It keeps us, you know, remaining as we continue to talk about for competitiveness in our lineup. And we felt like it was a good fit.
Forecheck podcast. My name is Sean Smith. I'm a writer at On the Forecheck, and I am joined tonight by our site manager, Kate. Kate, how you doing?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing very well, Kate, and I'll be honest, I'm very excited to have you on the podcast tonight. This will be the first time we've had you on here.
I'm excited to be here.
We also have joining us tonight a resident editor of On the Forecheck, one of the editors, Brian Baston. How are you doing, Brian?
I'm doing pretty good, Sean. How you been?
Well, I just answered that question, Brian, but I'm still doing really well.
Okay. Well, you know, I'm very interested in your well-being, Sean, but continue on.
Just unnecessary information. That's fine. But also, speaking of unnecessary information, a fourth guest is with us tonight. And that
I take offense to that.
That's fine. I'm not worried about your opinions or your feelings. But we're joined by the voice you just heard, Eamon Smith, our resident man-child. Eamon, how are you?
I'm doing good. I'm feeling a little hurt in the moment, but it's okay.
I will say this. He may be our youngest, our sweet baby boy, but he's also, as you guys could probably tell in the last year, because he's coming up on a year writing for the site, probably one of the busier people on our site, you know, putting out quite a bit of content, and it's all really good, if not really goofy and silly at the same time. So yeah, I mean, we joke with him, but he's putting out a tremendous amount of work, and we're just so proud of our little one.
He's all grown.
You're gonna make me blush.
Well, that's the goal. Anyway, so we're all here tonight, and we have a pretty exciting show planned out. This is episode 13, lucky number 13, what I used to call the Bonino episode, but unfortunately, Nick Bonino is no longer with the Nashville Predators. So now this is the Yakov Trinan episode of the show, which I'm also actually very excited about, is that he's on the team this year. But I digress. So let's get right into it. We're going to start with talking about training camp. And Brian and I have both had the opportunity to be either at training camp itself or at the scrimmages over the past week and a half. Actually, we've been there so much, at least for me, it seems like a lot of it's running together. So before we get super confused and get lost somewhere, let's try to get all of our thoughts out, Brian. So I'd like you to start, mainly because you were there first.
Yeah. You know, this is my first year covering these training camps, at least in person. But you can tell I can tell from the start that everything's very much different. I mean, there's a lot of, they're cramped for time. Now, we've learned that they did quite a bit of off-season work together. I'm not sure if that's, you know, groups of the players or maybe entire, you know, units, the forwards or defensemen, things like that. But they did quite a bit of work in the off-season. And so, you know, conditioning seemed all right, but there were a lot of time spent on just playing with player combinations. Obviously, they came into it without Granlund, without Duchesne, without Luke Cunningham. And then, of course, you didn't have Philip Tomasino, who's under quarantine. So, you know, a lot of the guys that people were looking to see, you know, who are these guys going to play with? Where are they going to fit on the roster? Weren't there to start. And so we saw kind of a lot of mixing and matching. You know, drills were very crisp and tight as far as they'd go for a good solid 2 or 3 minutes at a time. And then as soon as they were done, group back up on Coach Hines, which was really good to see because they had a purpose, I think, when they started camp. They had a purpose for every single drill that they were doing. So, Sean, I mean, what did you notice as far as, you know, when things were getting kicked off last week? What were the things that caught your eye?
So one of the things that I was really encouraged by, and I know you just mentioned this, you noticed this when you were there, but it's a holdover from the return to play, was that Hines does a lot of actual teaching on the ice. And the practices I'd been to, the open skate, they'd randomly have like a kids club event or something where you could go attend practice. And Laviolette practices were very, very different. I always describe them as just business as usual practices where everybody kind of just went out and did their own thing. They kind of had a set routine for what they were going to do, and they didn't really switch things up. But with Hines, I initially thought, because of the return to play, that it was possible this was just, hey, look, I'm still trying to get my system implemented here. But it seems like this is what practice is with Hines, is that I'm going to teach you something, we're going to practice it, we're going to come back and we're going to review, we're going to practice it again, and then we're going to move on, and then I want to see it implemented when we get a scrimmage going or something like that. So for me, that was the big thing. And what you were talking about with, I think you actually had tweeted out a video of this earlier, showing this drill they'd been working on where you kind of had pairs of players working together, really kind of lined up well with something I heard them talking about in the State of the Union address tonight, which was the idea that they have some very good forward pairs. I mean, granted, you have the Jofa line. We're just going to acknowledge that that's a thing. But moving down the depth chart to the second through fourth lines, they have very good pairings of forwards, and they're looking for someone who can come in and give instant chemistry with that pairing to make it a full line. So I think in hindsight, that drill that we kept seeing where there were two on twos, basically, you saw a lot of those really good pairings working together. And I guess they're just auditioning for who's going to be playing, who's going to be the third person on that line. So that was something I think was interesting to me, was I didn't really get the full purpose of that drill until today.
Yeah. I was going to say that, you know, I think one of the first line impacts on the line makeup that I saw was in that drill. Cause I saw, you know, I saw Duchesne and Holla working together to start, but they would kind of cycle in, and you'd see Cunnan and Duchesne, or Yarncroke and Duchesne. They kind of had those four players cycle and playing with each other, because obviously Mikael Granlund's not going to, he's still dealing with immigration. And, you know, I think Coach Hines said that they don't expect him to play at the very least, probably not the first week of games or so. So, you know, if you figure that he slots back in the second line like he was last season, you know, you've got one spot technically available for three guys. And so it was good to see that chemistry and, you know, who was effectively working with Duchesne, because I think, you know, there's a high chance that we're going to see Duchesne with Cunnan and Holla on the second line to start the year. And so you slowly started to see, as each drill went on, them putting those groupings together and kind of, you know, saying, okay, here are like the four different combinations of these players. Let's pare it down to two for the next drill. And then by the end of it, they had their four lines kind of set up. And, you know, there was a purpose to all of it. You could see the way that these players were cycling with each other and doing these drills, that Hines had already started to kind of group them into, here's these pairs, and this is where this pair would probably play if they're going to. So it was really good to see that. One other thing is, many of the drills, I think, even on the first day compared to today, was they had a specific purpose for each drill, and it was almost all of them were very situational. They would do something to practice just aggressive forechecking. They would do things to where they put a big focus on in that forechecking, you know, getting players pinched to be able to hold them back in their defensive zone. And that was something that, you know, in the middle of the drill, there was Coach Hines was out on the ice teaching, like Sean said, and you know, you could see exactly what he wanted them to emphasize, how they wanted him to do it. And then he kind of let them develop into it and out of that. And so, you know, there were a lot of things that Nashville struggled with in the last couple of years that you saw Hines zero in on immediately.
And I think too, you know, to add to that, he's not afraid when he teaches them something and then lets them try it out, that he lets them get it wrong a few times, then he'll jump in and he'll reteach it and say, look, it wasn't that you could hear specifically what he was saying, but you could hear by the tone of his voice that it wasn't coming from a place of frustration or anger. It was like, no, this isn't what I mean. This is what I mean. I need you to be over here. And then as soon as you see this happen, spring out here to be ready for this pass and then take it down the ice. And I think that says a lot. Just again, my limited experience of practice is I've seen Hines practices and I've seen LaViolette practices, and they're as different as night and day. So the situational things that they were working on, I know that we're going to work on these situations in practice, and then we're going to see how they play out at game speed at 5 versus 5 or at the power play or a penalty kill situation in the scrimmages. So I was able to attend both scrimmages, Brian, were you able to watch them?
Yeah, I saw in bits and pieces, but I saw basically from start to finish for both of them.
So that's where they wanted to see how these things played out. And just because we've been there to see what was happening in practice, how well do you think those types of drills or those situational drills really played out once they got on the ice in a 5-versus-5 game speed situation?
Yeah, I mean, so obviously, you know, you have to take the results of scrimmages like this kind of with a grain of salt because, you know, depending on how things go, you're playing against your teammates. Teams can be balanced or unbalanced, as we saw the first scrimmage where one team was just absolutely stacked. But, you know, I think you could see leading up to it in practice, you would see certain players, you know, really doing well in certain drills. And, you know, those were the guys that you could be like, okay, like they've had a really good couple of days of practice. And those were the guys that you could, you know, go ahead and zero in on in the scrimmages and see. And I think there are a couple that really stood out. Obviously, Philip Forsberg, which, you know, we don't need to spend a ton of time on that. But, you know, he came in and he really is the leader of this forward group. I mean, I think, you know, there's Johansson and Duchesne with the bigger contracts, longer contracts, you know, playing center. But this is Forsberg's team as far as, you know, the forwards go. And I asked Coach Hines about that today, actually, in post-practice. And, you know, his value is that a lot of players really need a complementary player to really excel on a line. You know, you see somebody like Arvidsson who really, really needs Ryan Johansson. He didn't really do too well when playing with other centers last year. But Forsberg, on the other hand, is a guy that you put him on a different line, he's going to elevate that line and he's going to drive play. And all of a sudden, a line that's not getting much, you know, they're not getting a lot of opportunities, you know, all of a sudden they're generating offense or they're playing a little bit stronger defense. And so, you know, he was one that, I mean, practiced incredibly hard from what I saw, you know, in the few that I've seen, and then carried it right into the scrimmages. The other person that really stood out and again stood out today in practice was Nick Cousins, a player that admittedly I kind of started off thinking, you know, after he got signed that, you know, all right, well, aside from off ice stuff that has been addressed in the past, you know, he's a little bit better than Watson, but he's brought in for that Watson role. And, you know, I think he's not that. He's probably going to get in some fights and he's probably going to draw some penalties, but there's a strong chance he's actually going to win his fights. The yeah. other thing, you know, not that that's what we want, but it'll be good to see him actually, you know, see us win a fight every once in a while. The other thing, though, is that he's played incredibly aggressively as far as playing, you know, playing defense, hounding the puck carrier, but still staying pretty sound. And with, you know, playing alongside a lot of times like people like Colton Sissons, it's a really good tandem to have because Sissons is he's been this way for a while now. He's a pretty effective middle of the lineup, you know, two-way center. I want to say two-way, but that implies, I mean, he's much stronger defensively than he is offensively. But, you know, you can put him in there and say, you know, these are the hard minutes. We need you guys to just eat some time, chew some clock, and not give up, you know, a bunch of shots or a bunch of goals. And that's kind of what Sissons brings. And so Cousins complements that well because, you know, he's kind of playing that in between game. He's getting aggressive. He's trying to get to the net. You know, he's trying to create those turnovers. And then you've got a player like Rocco Grimaldi who, you know, he's defense isn't really his thing. He made some pretty good plays in practice today. You know, being aggressive, forechecking and things like that. But really, he kind of almost fills that Arvidsson role where he can carry the puck into the zone very, very well. And he's going to charge the net, basically. And, you know, so you've got those three contrasting styles. And you could start to see those things in practice, especially Cousins, because he stood out to me, you know, in several of the pairs that he had. So I wanted to throw this because it looks like somebody's got a question. Kate, did you have thoughts on this?
Yeah, I just wanted to step back a moment to what you had said when you mentioned the possibility of Cousins actually winning his fights, and then said, although that's not what we want to see. Obviously, the question of fighting in hockey is something that gets debated a lot, and is probably beyond the scope of a Preds training camp podcast right now. But I definitely think that any value that fighting does have to hockey is value that it loses if you know that the player on your team is going to lose the fight. Whether it's the question of enforcing, of deterrence, you know, the opponents won't want to mess with this valuable or young or often injured player because they know that if they do, they're going to get punched, or whether it's just the, well, the team's having a hard time, maybe a quick bout of fisticuffs will raise their spirits. You know, either way, if there's pretty much no chance that the player in question is going to win, then yeah, there's really any value that fighting has, regardless of what it's being weighed against. You have to be able to win if you're doing it at all.
Yeah, no.
You can't just be going out there to get beat up.
Yeah, it makes a ton of sense. I mean, it is something that, you know, there was a lot to be said, you know, for a guy like Watson, that a lot of the players would mention that, you know, they always appreciated when he'd get in there too. You know, there's a player that would start getting hit quite a bit and he would go out there and throw himself at it. But again, you watch and he starts this fight and then he's on his back or something like that. And you're like, okay, well, we did that. And now we're on the penalty kill. So yeah, it makes sense. There's that value, and whether or not you know, think it belongs in the game or doesn't belong in the game, you know, if you're going to do it well. Sean, I wanted to ask you, you know, regarding the scrimmage, was there anybody that you saw in practices that stood out to you that either, you know, lived up to the expectation that you saw in practice or kind of came out of nowhere and, you know, and performed well in the scrimmage compared to how they practice?
You know, I'll say two things, and I'm going to keep it kind of brief just in the interest of time. And I feel like I've mentioned this elsewhere too, but here's the thing. I'm a big third pairing kind of guy. Because I've always admired the guys that can come in and just be gritty when you need them to be gritty and get your top two pairs off the ice. Like I get that. But when I saw the signings over the summer, of Mark Borowiecki and Matt Benning, I was like, okay, hold on. This is something a little bit different. I think we've got something special here. And from the first moment I saw those two on the ice together, I absolutely believe that you're going to see an incredible third pairing. And I don't mean like you're getting another Yossi and Ellis, but I mean, you're going to get a good, solid pairing that can play. They're strong defensively, but they're also no one you want to mess with. Borowiecki is a monster. I mean, he seems like an incredibly nice guy, but I would not want to be on the ice with him. And I think it was Roman Yossi that said that he felt really fortunate that he got to play on the same team as Borowiecki instead of playing against him. And I think that says a lot that, you know, you've got a difference maker on your team when somebody says, I'm glad this guy's on my team for once, because it's really hard to play against him.
And it's good when he brings that into the, you know, brings that to your team, has that role that he's going to play, especially if he's a more physical guy. But, you know, the bar was pretty low as far as play from the third pairing. And so, you know, the fact is that, yes, these guys are signed to short contracts. These are meant to be stopgap signings for this season, maybe next season, depending on how things go. But, you know, both of them have stepped in and, you know, based on, you know, eye test or looking at a box score or even looking at metrics, you know, one thing's clear is that these guys are going to be better than Yannick Weber and Matt Irwin or, you know, Jared Tenorti and Dan Hamhuis. Now, granted, all credit goes to Dan Hamhuis, who had actually a much better season last year than I remember. But still, the point is these guys came in, the coaches knew what they were getting out of these players as far as what their roles might be, but their on ice play too is actually much better than what we're used to seeing. And so, you know, we're going to get to see a lot. We're going to be panicking a whole lot less. You know, you might get to see more minutes for those two you know, to kind of ease the load on players like Yosi and Ellis playing 26 minutes or something. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's a definitely a new look third pairing, and it's I think you're going to like what you see. It's, you know, I think you're going to get exactly what's been advertised in it, and I think you're going to get a little bit more, and like you said, a lot less panic, and I think you'll see them playing more minutes than previous third pairings. Now something interesting happened today, and
yes,
none of us were expecting this, and it just kind of happened. I assumed, like I think most of us did, that all of the players hitting the waiver wire, that there was a gentleman's agreement that you wouldn't be poaching your waivered players. I know that a lot of the players that the Predators waived would probably have been pretty solid pickups. So I assumed there was some kind of gentleman's agreement, or maybe that only applied to certain players. But if I could get Eamon here, I know he's here somewhere.
Yeah, I am.
Talk about what happened this afternoon. That would be, why don't you take it away, Eamon?
Okay. So I woke up this morning, you know, went to class, did my normal things, and was in a very good mood. And then I get the news that the Predators felt the need to sign Lucas Pisa, who, for anybody who doesn't know what a Lucas Pisa is, I don't blame you because he's not super notable, but he's a defenseman who's played for the Philadelphia Flyers, the Vancouver Canucks, the Anaheim Ducks, and then most recently the Winnipeg Jets this past season. He's 30 years old. He had 10 points with Winnipeg last year in 44 games. Before going to Winnipeg, he got picked up and immediately waived by Anaheim. He's big. He's 6'3", 206 pounds. And according to basically every Ducks fan I talk to, he's pretty terrible. So that's wonderful that we just picked up a guy and added $800,000 to the cap hit for someone who is in Jerry Tenorti territory. I'm not super happy about the pickup, obviously. I wrote an article about that earlier today, briefly just talking about it, if any of y'all want to go read it. But his career ISO impact by hockeyviz.com, basically fancy terms for saying, is he good or bad? He's never been above average on defense and offense at the same time. If he does have a slightly above average offensive year, which I think he's only had for 1 year of his career, he was awful at defense. Yeah, he was awful at defense that year, though. He was almost 14% below league average in terms of threatening shots allowed. So he's rough. I don't love the fact that we bump somebody off the taxi squad in order to include a guy who's never been above replacement in his career at any point. He's old. He's big. He's slow. I thought we had the bottom pairing issues solved. I kind of get... You want maybe another body on the taxi squad that you feel sure can play in the NHL level. But like, just watching Jeremy Davies and comparing him to a guy like Spezza, who I watched a decent amount of last season with the Jets, I would say that Davies at least can skate with NHL players. I don't think Lucas Spezza has been able to do that for like 5 years. So mm-hmm. I wouldn't expect him to miraculously get better on that front. Just another bad depth pickup by the Preds. I don't really understand it. But probably doesn't impact the roster that much.
I will say this real quick. I'm sorry, Kate, just to clarify, because this is something that took us a while in practice to figure out, because this all happened right around the same time. But so the rules with regarding the taxi squad, because teams can, you know, most, you know, leading up to today, you know, people were being placed on waivers and then clearing. And one of the rules of the taxi squad is that if a player requires waivers to move up and down, that they get placed on it, and then they have a period, I believe, of 30 days following that if they clear waivers, they can move from the taxi squad to the active roster without any, you know, they can go straight, jump back and forth for those 30 days. The reason why this is important, especially regarding this transaction today, is that because the Predators claimed him off of waivers, he either has to be on the active roster to you know, his first action needs to be on the active roster. If they want to put him on the taxi squad, they would have to basically waive him again and hope that he clears. So that fact kind of locks in the fact that he's going to be whether or not he's a healthy scratch, he's going to be on the active 23. Maybe not to start the season because he's just getting signed, but at some point he's going to come in there. This isn't a, they didn't bring him in here to be a taxi squad. Now it might be a thing where they have him come in a few games, but yeah. So when it comes to, is he going to just, oh, is this a signing just for the taxi squad? No. At least to begin with, this is a, put him on the active 23. So I just wanted to clear that up. I apologize, Kate. I'm going to let you take over here again.
Thank you very much for clearing that up, especially because one of the things that has come up in discussion of some of these acquisitions has been, well, maybe they won't really be seeing that much ice time. But one of my biggest frustrations with the Spezza signing is, as Eamon brought up, you know, we have players like Jeremy Davies, who the Preds have signed, have acquired. Sorry, my we have players like Jeremy Davies who the Preds have acquired one way or another. Davies was one of the few bright spots of that weird Subban trade, which was basically for cap space. But the fact that they had picked up a player who Eric said even at the time, you know, hey, this might not be so bad, even before we saw that Subban's injury history was starting to catch up with him in New Jersey. But there are young players like Davies who we've been excited about, like Alexandre Carrier, who has spent four seasons in the AHL waiting to get that call up. Like Frédéric Allard, who is overseas at this point because they won't even play him. And, you know, you look at these young players and you look at the fact that before the season started, Poile was saying that there were going to be a lot of changes, there was going to be youth movement, and now we've got more of these inexplicable pickups of bad existing NHL players that other teams don't want. And it is frustrating.
Yeah, it really does kind of throw a wrench into what exactly they're planning for this, because, you know, the defenseman situation kind of seemed to have been sorted out pretty well. I think that most people are focusing on how the forwards are going to line up. I think a lot of people assumed that Nashville will probably carry seven defensemen, at least to start the season, maybe eight. And with Spezza being added, that kind of mucks things up, because there's several of these players who now, you know, you think they're going to be getting that time, you know, cycling in and getting active minutes, you know, in a game. They may not now, you know, starting a couple weeks into the season. And so it was baffling, I'll be honest. It was a little bit of baffling. Sean, what did you think of this, you know, this signing?
You know, your explanation, Brian, of how that signing kind of impacts the taxi squad and the waiver requirement and the placement on the main roster, it kind of makes sense. And I'm going to tell you why I think that. You know, you're looking at a main roster that currently would have the top six defenders and also Jared Tenorti. But the Predators are kind of in a unique position right now due to the pandemic baby boom that kind of happened with the team, in that two of your top four defenders are very soon to have babies. One of which is having their first child, and the other is having their second. And so I think the team has to be aware of the fact that just the way things work out with the unpredictability of pregnancies is that there's a chance that it may happen early or it may happen at the same time, and they would be down two defenders instead of one, necessitating the ability to very quickly put someone else on there. And now you're probably saying, well, Sean, why wouldn't they just pull somebody off the taxi squad? And I guess the way I see that is they can keep him on the main roster, and as soon as they know they don't need him anymore, they can waive him again. And if he gets claimed, he gets claimed, and they don't have to worry about it. That being said, that's the best guess I can give you. We'll really just have to wait and see how it plays out. And for now, I think it's time to listen to some very exciting sponsored messages from our advertisers here. All right, we are back from our ad break there, and I'm really happy to be here on the Forecheck podcast with Brian, Kate, and Eamon. We're going to move on now, and we're going to get into a little bit of a season preview. And I've just got a few questions. I'm going to let everybody have a chance to answer each question. We'll try to get through this fairly quickly. But the first question, and I'm going to throw this to Eamon first, is I want to know who you think are the top four teams in the Discover Central Division this season, in order.
Oh, you had to throw the branding in there to ruin my reality, didn't you?
Yep.
I'd probably say, Tampa's the easy pick to win the division. Carolina's been the hipster pick every year in the Metro. I've watched a lot of Carolina. They're a very good team. I have them finishing second in the division, but I don't think they're anywhere close to Tampa yet. I don't think they're within, you know, spitting distance of that team, even without Nikita Kucherov, even without Tyler Johnson and all the cap maneuvering they've had to do. They're still one of like the three best teams in the NHL, if not the best team in the NHL. So Tampa wins the Central, Carolina places second. I have the Preds third. And I'll get to that in a second, but, shocker of what this fourth pick implies, I have the Panthers finishing fourth in the division. So the Dallas Stars missed the postseason after going to the Stanley Cup final, which if you want to read more about that and why I think that, you should read the roundtable that we're going to be coming out with in a little bit, covering the season preview.
Interesting. All right, Kate, what do you think? Who are the top four teams going to be in the Discover Central Division this season?
I, like Eamon, I'm a Tampa believer. I think everyone is a Tampa Bay Lightning believer. Even when the takes were starting to heat up, they were actually terrible because they'd never won the Stanley Cup. People were still saying, well, no, look at them. Look how good they are. And then they won. After that, it gets tricky for me because I think that in terms of talent and in terms of potential, we might be able to see the Dallas Stars and or the Columbus Blue Jackets in that top four. But those are two of the NHL teams that have already had issues with COVID at practices, and the Stars are actually having a delay to the start of their season. So how that's going to end up impacting standings in terms of games missed potentially, or in terms of players who might take a longer time to recover, I don't know. The pandemic situation makes it really tricky to tell. And then also, like Eamon, I have the Carolina Hurricanes somewhere in the top four. I am not confident in the Preds offense, and I'm not as confident as I would like to be in the Preds goaltending. So once again, I am here to be the pessimist and suspect that the Preds might miss the postseason this year as well.
Probably not the prediction that everybody listening wants to hear, but certainly not without definitely a little bit of merit there, something to be concerned about. So
I'd like to be wrong. Well, I would welcome people lining up when the postseason comes around, or if there's a parade, I would welcome people going, Kate, see, you thought you were so smart saying the Preds weren't going to have a good season. I would love that. I welcome those comments.
That actually is a fairly safe bet, though, isn't it? You say they may not make it, and then if they don't, you're right, and if they do, then you made it, right? That's good stuff. That's just a smart play. All right, Brian, what do you think? In the Discover Central Division this season, who are the top four teams?
Well, my picks for the Central Division presented by Discover Card. Ooh. There you go, Eamon. I think it's hard. I look for a lot of reasons to not put Tampa first, but there aren't any. They've got good goaltending, and you know, even though they're going to be missing Kucherov, I don't think that's going to be too huge of an issue. Yeah, they may not go on the points percentage tear that they did the last two seasons, but I think they're going to be fine. I think the talent gap is just too large for the other Central teams to overcome. So Tampa will be good first. You know me, I'm always a big fan of Carolina and what they do. I think having a healthy Dougie Hamilton will help. You know, they've got pretty good defensemen that kind of fly under the radar. I know a lot of people think that Dougie Hamilton's really bad for some reason. I know there was a debate in the offseason talking about, you know, is he better than, more valuable than Seth Jones, which, you know, as somebody who likes Seth Jones for the most part as a player, it's not even close to me. But so I put Carolina second. I struggled with third and fourth because Dallas seems to be a team that's built to handle Nashville. But as you know, we've already pointed out, they're going to have issues with the start to their season. I think that they have some holes in the lineup that may or may not, you know, naturally heal themselves as the season starts. So for right now, I'm going to have them out of the top four. And I'm going to put Columbus at third. I know that there's a very good chance that Dubois is going to be gone just because of the dispute between him and the GM, I guess. But I think, you know, they're going to be healthy. They played very well last season, despite having just a massive amount of injuries. So I think I'm going to put them third, and then I'll put Nashville fourth. I think that's probably about where I expected their talent level and their potential to be. They could maybe move up to as high as third, but I think they're going to be in that round. They'll make the playoffs. We'll see how it goes after that.
Definitely some interesting predictions there. I'm going to say that my opinions most closely mirror those of Eamon. But I think it's time we move on to the next question. And that question, I'm going to start with Brian. Who is the Predators MVP this season? Give me one player and tell me why.
All right. I think the obvious choices of someone like Yossi or Ryan Ellis, I think, you know, are pretty, yes, we know that the team revolves around Roman Yossi. That, you know, that's something that everybody knows now. They've accepted that. We saw what he did last season. You know, I talked earlier about Philip Forsberg. I think he does play an extremely important part on this team. I think he is probably the most valuable forward on the team. But I'm going to say that the MVP, I guess, start going into the season is going to be UC Saros. They've talked in camp already about how they're going to be a 1A, 1B situation as far as goaltending. But I think it's pretty well understood, and I think we'll see this probably tomorrow or Thursday morning, that I think we're going to see Saros start this season. And I think we're going to see him get a little bit more of the starts than I think than Rene will. And, you know, they both started out not very well last season. Saros rebounded and finished very strong to end the season. Rene did not. Now, will things be, I think that, you know, I have a hunch, but I have no way of confirming this right now, but I think Rene had some injury things to deal with last season. Hopefully he's healed up on that. This is going to be his last season most likely, but I think it's going to all hinge on what can they trust UC Saros to do? How will he perform, you know, this season when the team needs him? And is he ready basically to step in and become the unquestioned starter after this season's over? With Connor Ingram coming through. So yeah, I'm going to say UC Saros. I'm curious to see what you have to say, Eamon, about this.
So you kind of stole mine there, but I was between two players and they were basically of equal probability in my mind. So I'll take the other one here. Obviously I'm talking about Matt Benning. No, I'd probably have to say that my projected MVP for the team has to be Philip Forsberg, because this team is going to ride or die based upon what he can do at the top of that forward group, specifically with the power play. I think John Hines tends to really thrive with allowing wingers especially to have more creative ability within his systems. Watching the Devils especially, that's kind of the impression I got, and that's not just from Taylor Hall, that's from some of the guys further down the lineup too. Forsberg, excellent forechecker, best forward on the team by a decent margin, in my opinion. You know, best shot creator. On a power play that's actually semi-functional, I think Forsberg scores at a really, really good clip this season. And given how lackluster the offense has been in the past, if he can get going, I feel like everybody else can kind of get going. We saw a bit of a down scoring season from him last year, but I expect him to rebound. He had really good underlying numbers. He should have had a better year last year. And I think he'll bounce back to be the team MVP. You know, you could talk about Yoc too, but I would say that Forsberg is going to be your big boy this year, who's driving a lot of the offense. We can go ahead and hand this question off to Kate here. Kate, what do you think is going to be our last candidate here for the MVP of the team?
Well, I was going to say Yoc Saros, and Brian beat me to it. And then I was going to say Philip Forsberg, and you beat me to it. So I guess one thing that we can definitely take away from this is that there's a lot of consensus about which players are going to be the most key to the Preds having a good season. So I am going to go out on a bit of a limb here, since the obvious answers have already been suggested, and say that whichever of the top six centers is not playing with Philip Forsberg, if he can elevate his game so that he's actually able to drive that other top six line, so that there really is a top six instead of a top three and a middle six, that would be something that would benefit the Preds hugely. It's something that they've had for brief intervals of time when Kyle Turris was newly traded for, and then again when Matt Duchene was newly signed. There was the Jofa line, and, or I guess with Duchene there wasn't the Jofa line, but the idea of a top six where both of those lines were an absolute threat to score every game more than once was something that was really, really beneficial to the whole team. So if we can see that kind of performance out of probably Duchene, potentially Johansson if they end up moving Forsberg back to playing with Duchene and Granlund the way he was last fall, that would be something that would make a huge difference for the Preds. And what about you, Sean? We've covered several pretty obvious options, and then I copped out a bit there, but what's your take on who's going to be the most valuable player for the Preds?
I'm going to tell you, I think it's going to be Matt Duchene. I know that's going to draw a lot of controversy here, but I think this is the year that Matt Duchene silences all the doubters, silences all the haters, and he puts up big numbers. I think he looks really good coming into camp. I think he's ready to play. I think he's ready to prove himself too. So I think it's going to be Matt Duchene. Of course, time will tell. We know that, but maybe that's a bit of a bold prediction. So I'm going to move on to the next question, which of course is, what is one bold prediction you have concerning this season? Now, of course, this can be to the league as a whole or another division or this team or anything really. So Kate, I'm going to let you start off.
My boldest prediction is another real downer. I don't think that the season is going to go as smoothly as the league hopes it does. I hope that there are no serious lasting consequences, but I don't think that they're going to be able to get through without at least one COVID-related outbreak of sufficient size that it has a serious impact on the season, whether it's really messing up the standings in one of the divisions, whether it's having a sizable impact on some kind of maybe a candidate for the Heart or something like that, whose team ends up missing enough games that candidate isn't the voters don't consider that player to have had enough impact to be the most valuable. Somewhere along the line, I think that the season's going to get pretty significantly derailed for at least one team, which is probably not the kind of cheerful, bold prediction you were hoping for, Maybe Brian, you might have something a little less grim.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, one of my thoughts was probably along the same lines as what you said. I don't think it's really necessarily being a downer as much as it is just being, you know, realistic about the season. But it's, you know, especially because the two teams that are going to start the season with fans are Dallas and Carolina. Florida just reversed what they said and are going to go without fans. So it's curious to see if Dallas holds to that. So for me, I think the Predators, I'm going to say that the trade deadline this year should be a lot busier for the Nashville than it has been in recent years. They have a ton of space still. I mean, yes, I think it's down to $4 or $5 million now, but I think that you may see one or two of these veteran signings, you know, see a lot less time or get waived, because there's room. And if this team looks like it can be, you know, sitting at that line of maybe third in the Central, you know, I think the team is going to want to say, okay, we ended up with so much cap space in the end of this offseason. Obviously, the plan must have been to land somebody in that Taylor Hall adjacent region, but they didn't. And I think what they ended up doing probably was the second best option, you know, as far as getting players that aren't going to cost a lot of money, aren't getting tied up in long contracts, but fill roles and are upgrades from, you know, some of the below replacement level players. So I think that's going to be big. I'm not sure who they might go after. I'm trying to wrap my head around all the players and where they are now at this point. But yeah, I think the trade deadline is going to be busy. It could be where they go for it and they try to grab a player cheaper, or you know, maybe they sell. Who knows? So I think the next person we want to hear from on this one is the man himself, Sean.
Okay, well, I'm glad you threw to me, because I'll tell you, last season I made a bold prediction. In the offseason, there was a lot of chatter about how good the New Jersey Devils were going to be with their how well they performed at the draft and, of course, their acquisition of PK Subban. And I went ahead and called it, and I said that I thought the Devils were going to miss the playoffs entirely. And not only did that come true, but they didn't even make the qualifiers. So instead of focusing on a team that I don't think is going to do well, I'm going to make a prediction that the Calgary Flames are going to make a very deep cup run. That's my prediction. I don't know how bold it is. Definitely a new look in the Canadian division, but I think they're going to go pretty far. And I hope I'm right, because that would be exciting. They're an exciting team to watch. So I want to hear what Eamon has to say, what his bold prediction is.
So obviously everybody is expecting something Flyers related from me, but again, you'll have to go read that roundtable article on theforecheck.com in order to get any kind of Flyers related stuff out of me here. I'm going to go ahead and say something pretty crazy here, and it'll probably blow up in my face, but whatever. Ellie Tolvanen leads all rookies in goal scoring. That's a pretty hot one there. That's a scorcher. And I could easily see it, you know, blowing up in my face. He's a healthy scratcher on the third line at some point during the season. He's not getting regular minutes, but just looking all of the pieces together, he's got a good shot at playing on the second line. The Predators have pretty talented top two centers. You know, if that Johansson line ever ends up getting broken up and he gets put with Tolvanen, Tolvanen still has the shooting ability to be pretty compatible with Johansson there, so I'm not super worried about line shuffling so long as Tolvanen remains in the top six. And I don't think this team sees him as somebody who can play third line or fourth line minutes. They're looking at him as a strictly top six player. Otherwise, I think he would have made the Predators much sooner. But he's probably getting heavy power play time most of the season as a primary shooting option. You know, much like Forsberg would be utilized on the top unit, he's probably going to be utilized on the second unit, or maybe they throw him on the top unit to kind of create a different look at some different points in the season if, you know, the original idea is getting stale. But I could easily see him putting up over 20 goals in this season and, you know, scoring at around a 28 goal pace for an 82 game season. So I don't really remember exactly what I scoped it out what that would be over, you know, 56 games, but I think he'll be, you know, second on the team in goal scoring or somewhere in that region, which is, again, pretty scorching take to throw out there, but I love him as a player. I think, you know, while he hasn't scored super well down in Milwaukee, I feel like that's more of just a product of the system he was in and him getting a little bit unlucky, as well as how he's being deployed. And I think in Nashville, John Hines seems to be really focused on, you know, tinkering with some of the stuff that the team struggled with, but then also really focused on using the player's actual strengths and making sure that they're a good fit for the system rather than kind of forcing them into this rigid scheme and hoping that everything clicks. So I think Tolvanen's really going to thrive in this setting, and he could be the big breakout candidate of the year, score a whole lot. I don't expect a lot of assists out of him, but yeah, he'll lead all rookies in goal scoring.
Eamon, I really, really like that prediction. And I'm going to back you up on that. I think that would be a wonderful thing to have happen, and I think there is some potential for it. So that being said, moving on to our last question. What is the line to watch on opening night? And I want to hear from myself first. I want to tell you what I think. And the reason that I like Eamon's prediction so much, or his bold prediction, is because I think the line to watch on opening night is whichever line Tolvanen finds himself on. And I don't know exactly what that's going to be. And in all honesty, by the time you're listening to this podcast, there's a solid chance we may have an idea of what those lines are going to look like. I don't know. But I think you're going to want to wait and see what Elie Tolvanen's able to do. I think he comes out in the first game he plays and he has a big game. And I think everyone gets really big expectations after that. That's kind of what I'm hoping happens. So I'd like to hear from Eamon. What is the line to watch on opening night?
I'm just going to go with, you know, the Jofa line. That's kind of, you know, the easy answer to give, but simple is sometimes best. So we saw last year in the playoffs when that line got reunited, they were easily the team's most effective line in the postseason against the Arizona Coyotes. Scored a lot of goals, were really effective all across the board. Ryan Johansson looked like Ryan Johansson again, rather than kind of a shell of himself that got us all really worried during the regular season. Arvidsson kind of looked functional. You know, there were games where he still looked completely invisible because I feel like teams have figured out how to defend him. Go read that Arvidsson report card if you want to look at that. But I just really want to see, does the Jofa line look effective on the first night? We've heard good things out of practice and everything, but I'm personally on team reunite Duchesne and Granlund with Forsberg. Because during the regular season last year, the Jofa line didn't look all that good for most of the time that they played together. So I'm really, really looking forward to seeing, do they replicate that success from the playoffs? Does everybody look really strong together on that first night? Or is it, you know, everybody struggles with Philip Forsberg. He's trying to drive the line. He looks like he's attempting to do too much, which is what we saw more during the regular season. So that line has been a bit of Jekyll and Hyde this past year. I'm really intrigued to see what they actually end up looking like for the rest of this season and whether or not they get to stay together, or if, you know, we see an inevitable line shuffle and Forsberg is back with Duchesne and Granlund, which was the best line that the team had assembled in like the past 10 years. When they were playing together, they just stopped getting results at a point and got broken up and never got back together again.
Okay. Kate, what is the line to watch on opening night?
Well, I've had quite a few people tell me that I'm going to, well, I don't know about quite a few people. I think it was mostly you and Brian from your training camp reporting. Telling me that I was going to be very excited by Matt Duchesne's performance this year. So I guess that's the line I'm going to be watching to see how he's looking. I've heard that he has been, once he took the ice at training camp, that he had been putting in a lot of work and was performing very well. So That's definitely something to keep an eye on. Like Eamon, I'm also going to be very interested in seeing how the Jofa line looks. They have, for a lot of the past few years, they really have been more or less synonymous with the success of the team, and really just needed that additional second line to back them up. But I think the top six, one way or another, is going to be where my attention will be. And what about you, Brian? Which line are you most excited about, most worried about, whatever?
Obviously, I think I wanted to say the second line, but it's going to be more, I think, to watch who's going to perform well enough to get that spot alongside Duchesne and Graylin. But I think what's going to be more important, and I know this is technically not answering the question correctly, but I think the most important group of players to watch is going to be the second pairing. We're going to see if Mathias Ekholm can, you know, continue. He had a down year, I guess, you know, looking at his metrics and defensive things last season, but a lot of that was being, you know, forced into, you know, one, being in a role where he was being, you know, alongside PK Subban, where Subban was handling transitions and things like that, allowing him to be a stay-at-home defenseman, to, you know, having him carry the puck more and having him kind of quarterback, you know, the team when he was on the ice. And watching Fabbro, you know, in practice, he has seemed to pick up. He's put on some size. I think Ekholm talked about it today, you know, that he's done a lot of work over the offseason. So I expect it to look better because, frankly, Fabbro had a pretty bad year. I think Ham Hughes graded out better than he did last season, unfortunately. But it'll be interesting to watch and see, you know, how long they keep that together, because when you've got two veterans down there on the third pairing, and if that second pairing isn't working, we could very easily see Fabbro move down to the third pair, putting him, you know, alongside somebody, you know, like Borowiecki or something like that, to kind of help get him back into shape. So yeah, that second pair is going to be really interesting because, you know, if they perform well, then that takes a load off of Josi and Ellis, and that can cut down on their, you know, the time they have to spend per game on the ice. So yeah, that's mine. And so I guess we can have Sean take us home.
Okay. Well, here's the thing. Earlier, and I guess this was, you know, whenever you're listening to this, it was definitely not today, but I'd had the opportunity, rather my children had the opportunity to participate in a Zoom with a few players because they are part of the Predators Kids Club. And it was kind of interesting. I'm used to asking players a lot of questions that relate to hockey, but it was fun to hear some of the questions the kids had to ask. And they actually used one of my daughter's questions, which was, what was your favorite subject in school? And the players that were there that were involved in the Zoom were Eric Howla, UC Saros, Philip Tomasino was there, and also Chris Mason was kind of running things for everybody. And they all answered the question. And I thought it was interesting, the answers they gave. And so I'd kind of teased on Twitter, you know, like, hey, who do you think, you know, what do you think they chose? So I'm going to go ahead and tell you now, Howla, which I thought this was pretty cool. Howla was a big math guy. And it was kind of fun to hear him and Chris Mason talking about how they felt really confident in math till they got to the higher level stuff. And then they were kind of like, okay, this is getting out of control, which is also what happened to me. I'm sure Brian would probably laugh at that and like type in a joke on the calculator or something to make fun of me. And that's fine. But that was for Howla was math. UC Saros, which I thought was, well, actually, you know what? Philip Tomasino said that he was interested in history when he was in school. He said he had a really dynamic history teacher that did a lot of really cool stuff, kind of brought history to life. And UC Saros said that he enjoyed the home ec class where they taught you how to cook because he really enjoyed learning how to cook. And then he also enjoyed eating what he had made. And I thought that was really interesting because I don't know that you really think a lot about some of these players. They do end up spending a lot of time, especially at the lower levels, making their own meals sometimes and cooking for themselves. So I think that was probably a very valuable skill for Saros to pick up when he was in school. So we've got a little bit of time to close out, and we've always asked our listeners to chime in on Twitter and give us some questions. And I want to start, it may be the only one we get to, we'll see how much time we have, but we had a great question from VJ Mueller. And the question is, how do you think the Preds will split time between Rene and Saros this season? And do you think we'll see any of Connor Ingram? And I want Eamon to answer this question.
Well, we were just talking about, you know, goalies and, you know, our adorable boy, Yusei Saros, who enjoys eating food. What a human being. But I really think that we're probably going to see a 60-40 split of the starts. You know, at best, we're seeing Rene for 40% of that. And it kind of all just shakes down to how many games is Rene able to play this year? Because I think they'll just ride the Yusei bus or the Saros bus, whatever you want to call it, for as long as possible when it comes to giving him the majority of the starts. He's absolutely the starter coming into this season. As for the Connor Ingram thing, again, I think that kind of rests on how Rene looks this year, because if he's having a rough time, if he needs a couple breather games, there are a lot of situations this year where, you know, there are going to be games that are back-to-backs. And that kind of complicates everything, especially when you're looking at managing the load of an older goalie like Rene at this point. And I think you'll see a lot of teams across the league do this, where you'll have players who are older kind of come out of the lineup for a night or so if you have multiple back-to-backs within a short span, in order to do kind of load management like they do in the NBA with similar situations. This isn't really something that the NHL usually has to encounter, but during, you know, this interesting schedule that we're dealing with during the pandemic, I think we'll see some of that. So I do think we'll see a decent bit of Connor Ingram. You know, he's obviously not going to be the de facto backup for most of the season, or at least that's what I'm going to take a guess at. But I think, you know, there'll be maybe 10 games this year where Connor Ingram is at least on the roster, and maybe half of them he gets a shot to start or something like that. I still think that's maybe a bit of a lofty estimate, but don't be shocked if we see Connor Ingram for like 3 or 4 games in the NHL this year, just because of extenuating circumstances surrounding Rene's conditioning and, you know, he's getting older.
Good answer, Eamon. I enjoyed that. And I personally would like to see a little bit of Ingram this season just to kind of get a preview. I didn't get to catch a ton of Milwaukee games. So we're going to take one more question before we finish things off. And I'm going to throw this one to Brian. This is coming from Claire, and I want to make sure I'm at least attempting to say the last name right. I believe it is Thwet. I don't know. But Claire asks, I'd love some more explanation on the strategy of the taxi squad. Who would you include and how would you use them throughout the season? And I will say this before I throw to Brian. Interesting, because we're talking about this right before they're probably going to announce who will be on the taxi squad. So take what we say with a bit of a grain of salt, because that may be totally different by the time they release that actual roster. But Brian, go ahead.
So real quick, I'll go over kind of some basics of taxi squad things that, you know, just to keep in mind, because it is a little bit complicated. But they've designated these taxi squads to be a group of players, anywhere from 4 to 6 players. One of them must be a goaltender. With Milwaukee opting out of this season, I don't see Nashville sending Ingram to split time in with the Chicago Wolves. The partnership, I guess, they've got with the Carolina Hurricanes with their AHL affiliate. So, you know, at least one of those spots is going to be taken by Connor Ingram. There are, you know, again, there's rules about the players that require waivers do have to clear. And I think that's why we saw the lineup of players in practice today, because several of those guys, like technically Carrier was already put on waivers and he's already cleared. They may have him in here to start, but basically because he's cleared now for the next month, he can bounce back and forth between the taxi squad and the active roster. And I think with, you know, the defensive logjam, I guess, you know, especially now with Sabisa, he's going to be a guy that you're going to see on that taxi squad, I think, fairly regularly. I think to start the season, because of the fact that he's been at World Juniors and, you know, had to quarantine for 7 days before he could make contact with the team. I think we're going to see Philip Tomasino start the season there. He's going to be able to, you know, the players on the taxi squad can practice with the team. They can be in meetings. So I think you're going to see Tomasino there. And with Tolvanen, he wasn't there as well. He's actually doesn't require waivers to be moved back and forth. And so, you know, not seeing him today does not mean that he's not going to play on Thursday. but I think he'll be another guy that we may see kind of swapped in and out of that taxi squad. So, you know, you've got Tomasino, Tolvanen, Carrier, and Ingram. I think, you know, I'm split. You know, you think that you might want to load this up with younger prospects to get them time with the team. I think guys like Michael McCarron is another one that maybe we could see move on and off. And, you know, Rem Pitlick is another one. I've been really high. A lot of us have been really high on Rem Pitlick. No one more so than Eric. I think he's very ready to be a contributor at the NHL level, especially, you know, putting him in the bottom six. And so, yeah, I think that's kind of where he's going to stay. So I think what we're going to do is we'll see that it's going to be kind of a holdover for those younger guys that need the practice time. They don't really, you know, you're not going to send Tolvanen or Tomasino, I think, to Chicago. I don't see that happening. And so, you know, you're going to see some of those guys like Patrick Harper, things like people like that, who kind of were on the fringe of making it or not. They may start out the season in the AHL, but I think this is going to be kind of the holding area for some pretty important guys that people really, really want to see this upcoming season. And so that's what I'd look for. It can change. You're going to see a lot of, I think along Kate's line with her bold take, I think we're going to see a lot of roster churning from every team this season. And so don't be surprised when you see players pop up and say, this player got waived from Nashville. Most of the time it's going to be a taxi squad move. So yeah. And then we have a little bit of time, and I'm going to kind of commandeer this real fast. Speaking of questions, I have a question for Sean. I would like to know, Yannick Weber, who came back to practice this off season, on a PTO, you know, what are you, do you have any favorite memories? I know you were fond of him, you know, as a guy off the ice.
You know, it's funny you should ask. I spent a lot of time today just reminiscing about good times with Yannick, and, a lot of this has nothing to do with on ice stuff, but Yannick was one of the first players that when I started, writing for On the Forecheck that I had the opportunity to interview. And of course, this was back before COVID, so I could actually interview him face to face. And he was very personable. He was a nice guy. I also noticed that he's very physically strong. And I thought that was kind of interesting when you find that his, what I believe someone said earlier, the thing he's really good at is denying zone entry or standing guys up at the blue line. But I think a big part of his health comes from the fact that he cooks a lot of his own food. And I remember he did a cooking segment on one of the news stations here in Nashville. And I remember that whatever he cooked was very highly technical. It was not something that a beginner chef would want to tackle. And I was really impressed at how well he pulled it off. And of course, I can speak with some authority on this because I've never been to culinary school, but I watch a lot of Food Network. So, you know, I feel like kind of an expert, but not really. So I remember there's this one instance where Trisha Yearwood has or had a cooking show on the Food Network, and she had some very special guests, and I believe it was Philip Forsberg, Ryan Johansson, and Yannick Weber. And I remember when I saw that Yannick Weber was one of the guests, I was like, oh, they brought in a ringer today. Like, it's going to be something else. And I remember that for most of the show, they just kind of kept Yannick in the background, and they were like, oh, here's this other guy who's also on the team. And I was like, oh, they're going to bust it out. They're going to let him come out, and he's going to just like cook up some awesome stuff, and they're all going to be amazed. It's going to be great. I can't wait for this to happen. And they never did. And they finally gave him a job to do. And it was at the end, after they'd made the food, they wanted, let's make a cocktail to go along with it. I feel like they had him cut up lemons or muddle some cherries or something like that. And I was just really disappointed that you had someone there that probably not the star of the team, not like the name that jumps out and grabs you, but this guy could have left this very big lasting impression as someone who knows his way around the kitchen. And I think, and I've said this before, I always try to do the player report card for Yannick whenever I have the opportunity, but I think that his best move when he retires is to try to get on the Food Network and have his own show where he cooks, because number one, he's led a very interesting life, you know, bumping around, playing hockey in a lot of different places. And he's got a really good personality, and he definitely has the cooking chops to back it up. So if this is the last time we see him in a Predators uniform, I'll be sad because, granted, when he's on the ice, I'm not really thinking about what's happening on the ice. I'm thinking about all of the off-ice memories I have with him. So hopefully this is the last time we see him with the team. It's not the last time we'll see him. And he'll be on a cooking show somewhere showing everybody what I've known all along. So that is what I would call Yannick Weber memory lane with Sean Smith. So thank you for asking that question, Brian. So I think we're going to wrap things up here. And, you know, I want to make sure that everybody kind of has an opportunity to do this. So what I would like to do is I'd like everybody, when they sign off, kind of tell everyone how they can find you on Twitter, since I know we're all fairly active there, but also kind of give everyone an idea of what you're currently working on for the website. So let's see. Let's start off with Eamon.
All right. I just wanted to throw in there right before we get into, you know, the outros, that Yannick Weber, second best cook in Predators history, behind only notably Darcy Hordichuk. If you get that reference, please tweet at me on Twitter. You can find me at Jin and Yusei, spelled like Yusei Saros. That's J-U-U-S-E. And I'm currently working on a couple of different things. I will probably have this out tomorrow, but there will be a season, or not a season preview, because we just did that, but a preview of the games going on this week, just briefly talking about what to expect with each of the opponents. And then also in terms of written content, I'm bringing back Fun Friday, which is a weekly piece that I did for a little bit there before I kind of ran into some stuff over break and everything and just difficulties getting that out. But that'll be back. And I'm obviously going to be working on recaps and previews all season long, along with other variety content. So stay tuned for that. You can find me on the Forecheck website under Eamon, Eamon 615. That's what my writing handle is.
Thank you, Eamon. I hope everybody has an opportunity to check out your Fun Fridays, as they are quite fun. My favorite piece that you've produced for that is definitely the Jalen Ramsey career piece. Kate, let's go to you next.
You can find me in theory on Twitter at Stats with Kate. That's StatsWithKate. But at the moment, I am sort of avoiding personal social media because there is a lot going on in the world right now, and it is bad for my stress levels to immerse myself in it nonstop. So I am not actually currently very active on Twitter, but if you're looking for me, that's where I can theoretically be found. This season, I am going to obviously be doing some game previews and game recaps. I'm also thinking, especially with the in-division format right now, that this would be a great time to bring back the Central Division weekly roundup that I did a couple of seasons ago. Just looking around, seeing what's going on every week with the other teams in the division. And I am excited at getting a chance to talk about some new teams that I enjoy watching and talking about in that weekly roundup. I'm looking forward to the opportunity to talk about teams like the Carolina Hurricanes and the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Columbus Blue Jackets instead of some other teams that are not so much fun to talk about. But it'll also be nice getting to see familiar, not so much familiar faces with all the roster shuffling, but familiar uniforms, let's say, after this year, the season ends and we go back to the old divisional alignment.
Kate, I'll definitely be looking forward to your the Central Division presented by Discover roundup, because due to the shuffling, I'm going to have to get to know some new teams. Brian, why don't you tell the good folks what you are going to be working on and where they can find you?
Yeah. So, as you guys already know, I'm wearing a little bit of a different hat this season. I've had a whole lot of help, last year and this off season, kind of prepping to take a little bit more of an active role and, getting to cover games in person. And I'm very thankful to be able to be the other half of the team that's going to be there. Again, I do thank, Rachel so much. And I do want to kind of recognize her, one, because and the most important. She has maybe the most adorable child I've ever seen in my life. That baby is just the cutest, and I can't get over that. But also because she's just been instrumental. She's been around here for a long time. She's done great work consistently. She does amazing stuff with Seventh Element. And so, you know, thank her for that. But outside of that, you're going to, we're going to be trying to do a little bit more. I'm going to be putting more time into, you know, working with this podcast. You can hear Sean and I, this season, we found out, we're going to be back, on the morning, the early, early mornings of game days. I'm going to let Sean kind of fill you in more on that, but I'll be popping in on the radio to pick up my one big stat to close off the show to talk about the Preds. So you can hear us both there. I've got a couple projects that have been sitting, you know, marinating for a long time. I've got the one about, I'm still gathering pieces for it, but you know, what happens to forwards when, you know, they come to Nashville? Why do they all stop scoring? That's one big one. The other one is, you know, doing a comparison, once we get some more games under our belt, you know, doing a comparison, looking at how the team performed under Laviolette, how they performed under John Hines. The season stopping last year was bad for a lot of reasons, but one of the reasons I think personally is that if they had gone to 82 games, I would have had a perfect sample size of 41 games each for both of them to compare with same players. And I was very upset that I was robbed of that, but that's a math nerd thing. So yeah, that's where you can find me. You can find me at Brian Baston on Twitter. If you're listening to this, you've seen me spam your timelines once or twice a day. So
of course, I'm Sean Smith, and you can find me here on this podcast. You can also find me writing at ontheforecheck.com. I will be covering games in person, which I got to start doing last season. And I think it's a fairly even split between Brian and myself, but we're going to be trying to focus our time while we're there on doing pieces that are a little bit more in depth. And just an example, something I've written recently was I wrote a piece on Predators prospect Patrick Harper that talked about how he kind of used this extended off season to his advantage and coming back into the Florida Everblades, the ECHL affiliate of the Predators, to get off to a really hot start. I was hoping he could come into camp and parlay that into a spot on the taxi squad. We'll see if that happens. Probably by the time you're listening to this, we'll know one way or the other. And yes, Brian and I will be, once again, we started during the return to play. We will be on the Renegades of Puck radio show in the morning. It comes on at 5 a.m. Central. So if you're listening anywhere to the west of us, that could be a pretty early one. Of course, you can go to the website, and I think you can download the episodes to listen to after they're over. But that's with Crazy Charlie, and you can find that if you're in the Nashville area on 560 AM, 95.9 FM. And if you're in Smyrna, 107.9 FM. Basically, I believe I'll be there toward the end, talk about what's been going on in the games and how things are kind of playing out on the ice. And Brian will be there toward the end to share some numbers and stats, which is always, I think, more interesting than what I have to say. But, you know, I don't understand the numbers like he does, so it feels good to have someone explain them to me. But you can find me on Twitter as well, at SCSOTF. So for the On the Forecheck podcast, I'm Sean Smith. I'd like to thank everybody for joining us today, especially getting Kate out here for the first time. It'd be awesome to have her come back more often. I always enjoy hearing from more than just myself and Brian and sometimes Eamon. So anytime we can get somebody else from the website on here, we would definitely welcome that and hope everybody enjoyed it. And let's see, by the time you're listening to this, we'll be very close to game day. So I hope everything goes well, and I hope you guys enjoyed the podcast, and I hope you'll enjoy the game. Signing off, this has been Sean Smith.